On About Books, we delve into the latest news about the publishing industry with interesting insider interviews with publishing industry experts. We'll also give you updates on current nonfiction authors and books, the latest book reviews, and we'll talk about the current nonfiction books featured on C-SPAN's Book TV. And welcome to About Books. In a few minutes, we'll talk with Kevin Sorbo, the actor best known for playing Hercules on television. More recently, though, he's written a Christian children's book aimed at teaching kids about masculinity. But first, here's some of the latest news from the publishing world. The finalists for the 2023 National Book Awards were announced recently. The annual awards were established in 1950 to celebrate the best in American writing. They're administered by the National Book Foundation. In the nonfiction category, the finalists are Ned Blackhawk for The Rediscovery of America, Native Peoples, and the Unmaking of U.S. History, Christina Rivera Garza for Liliana's Invincible Summer, A Sister's Search for Justice, Christina Sharp for Ordinary Notes, Raja Shahada for We Could Have Been Friends, My Father and I, A Palestinian Memoir, and John Valiant for Fireweather, A True Story from a Hotter World. Now, the winner of this year's awards will be announced in New York City on November 15th, and Book TV will be covering the ceremony. In other news, the American Library Association is without an executive director after Tracy Hall stepped down earlier this month. Ms. Hall was the first female African-American executive director when she was named to the post in January of 2020. Quote, to take on the executive director role at the outset of a pandemic and during an unprecedented escalation in censorship attempts has required intensive effort, she said in a statement announcing her resignation. And though there is still so much to do, I believe I am leaving the association on course to achieve new levels of impact. And from Capitol Hill, a group of lawmakers led by Maryland Democratic Congressman Jamie Raskin and Hawaii Senator Brian Schatz have introduced a resolution expressing concern about book bans across the country. The resolution cited data from PEN America, which says some 1,500 individual titles were removed from school classrooms and libraries across the U.S. last year. PEN America says that's an increase of 33% from the previous year. And one more item on the issue of book bans, Penguin Random House is trying to spread the word about the issue this month with its Bandwagon Tour. The publisher's Bandwagon vehicle is making stops in Georgia, Tennessee, Louisiana, and Texas to showcase a dozen of the most frequently challenged books and to hand out free copies of those books. Among the books that are featured on the Bandwagon are Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale, and Ibram Kendi's How to Be an Anti-Racist. And now a conversation with actor and author Kevin Sorbo. We spoke with the former Hercules television star about his new children's book aimed at teaching kids about masculinity. Well, actor and author Kevin Sorbo, your most recent book is a children's book, The Test of Lionhood. What's the plot?
The plot is a wonderful little story about this lion cub. His name is Lucas, and he and his younger sisters are out playing in the woods, and his young little sister, she gets a cut on a very poisonous plant. And he knows that the only way to save her life now is to get this a certain flower that's way up on top of a mountain. He doesn't have any time to go back to get his father because he's got to act right now. So he's got to get past his fears. He's got to get past the obstacles now in front of him. He's got to rely on all the things his father was teaching him about a boy just being a boy and growing into a man. So he goes through all these different things that just sort of fighting his way through there and getting his courage up and finding his own strength and able to get up there to get the flower and get back down to save his dear little sister before she dies. So it's a wonderful story, really about just, you know, taking control of your life in situations that you probably never thought you'd have to face. And the whole idea of this book is really You know, I know they got this whole thing about emasculating men, and we've been doing it for decades, but no more than we have over the last 5 years, which has gotten crazy. And this book is really about celebrating masculinity. There's nothing wrong with a boy being a boy and a girl being a girl.
And is that why you wrote the book, because of supposed demasculating of men?
Sure. I mean, you see it in the movies all the time. I mean, it's crazy what's going on. I mean, I haven't seen Barbie. I know it's a big hit worldwide, $1 billion and more. But everybody that saw it said, oh, yeah, they pretty much tell women they don't need men. They make men look like they're a bunch of wimps and can't do anything. And women are far superior and all this. And you see that in action movies now, too, where the woman is the one who's going to come and save the day. Indiana Jones comes to mind. I mean, they put him sort of in the back room and they have this woman be the big action hero of that thing. So this has been playing out over and over again. You know, growing up as a kid, I remember all these sitcoms around, even the sitcoms around now. The guy is always kind of the one that the butt end of all the jokes. He's kind of a dumpy dad. The mom's kind of hot. The kids are teenagers, and they all just pick on dad and make dad look horrible. And this is what kids are growing up with, is saying that the father is not that important for the family, which is quite sad to me. So to me, you know, you eliminate the patriarchy, and I think you eliminate the human race. And the Bible teaches, you know, honor thy father. But sitcoms don't do that. It's a totally opposite way around. And television and movies have been doing it for a very, very long time now. And I think that we got to get to a place where enough is enough and just start standing up for let kids be kids and let them grow up to decide what they want to be in their lives when they become adults.
Now, you've written a couple of adult titles, True Strength,
yes.
True Faith. How is it different writing a children's book?
I think I had a lot more help on this one, which is good. I mean, Brave Books is amazing what they do. People can go to bravebooks.com, and it's amazing what they're able to get out there with the number of books they've been doing. And people can go join them right now. And they can go to Brave Books, and they can sign up for the Freedom Island Book Club. They'll get my book for free, and then they get a new book every month. And they really cater to like the 4-year-old to 12-year-old crowd. And there's just a number of books that are great for all kids of all ages in that group, and both boys and girls. And I just wanted to be, they came to me because they hear me speak a lot. And I said, you know, I'm tired of the sheep in this country. I'm tired of people saying there's a silent majority. Well, we need the lions to wake up and get out there. And the fact that I mention lions all the time in my speaking events, I think that's when Brave Books came to me and said, let's do something about masculinity and was called Linehood. And I said, sounds good to me.
Now, Kevin Sorbo, have times changed since you were Hercules in the 1990s as far as society and how we treat men and women?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's been changing for decades. I think the 60s was obviously a big pivotal decade with the Vietnam War, the feminist movement, the civil rights, the hippie thing, the explosion of rock and roll music. Which is always good and bad, and there's always messages in all those things. So, but it's definitely, I think, just gotten worse with a lot of the political leaders we've had through the last 15 to 20 years. And you just see that, you see a change in this country. You see, you're aware of this. I mean, there's so much anger out there. There's so much hate. There's so much divisiveness, and people just want to attack people all the time. And it's interesting to me that I don't harbor that kind of anger and hatred to people that have a different point of view politically than me, or that are atheists or agnostics. I'm a Christian. Maybe I don't wear that on my sleeve enough. I don't know, but I do a lot of family movies and faith movies, so I know that's out there. So I see the attack on that all the time. I see that every time you got a pastor in a movie or a conservative, they're portrayed as the goofballs and the idiots and the evil people, which is quite interesting to me when I find there's plenty of evil on both sides of the political aisle.
Kevin Sorbo, you mentioned Brave Books as your publisher. They also are Kirk Cameron's publishers. A lot of news about his being banned from libraries. Are you planning a book tour?
Believe it or not, I'm going to be reading in a public school, in an elementary school in New Jersey. So I think that's going to be an interesting step to see what happens when I think pretty much a lot of the liberal teachers will be glaring at me just talking about letting boys be boys. And I don't know why that's such a big deal. But I know Kirk, we were neighbors for many years when I lived in California, and the attack he had, I thought, was just very strange to me. I said, well, wait a minute, you're okay with drag queens reading in the public libraries, but not Kirk Cameron. So I said, where is this country going? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, speaking of which, should drag queen reading hours be banned, in your view, from public libraries?
I don't think they should be banned or not. I think parents have a right to make a decision if they want to bring their kids to that. You know, from my point of view, I honestly don't understand it. And I don't know why it's become a thing with drag queens reading in these libraries. But I'm a live and let live kind of guy. I don't tell people how they should live their lives. I'm just tired of so many people in the press and the media, movies and television telling me how I'm supposed to live my life. You know, I've worked around gay people all my life in Hollywood, 40 years. You're not going to find one out there that says I was horrible to them, because I'm not. I treat everybody the same and everybody equally. And to me, it's like, let's make a movie together. We're in the same industry. Let's have a good time. So I don't, like I said, I don't harbor that sort of anger. I mean, why not? They can read if they want to read in there. It's really up to the parents if they want to bring their kids to that.
What about book bans? What do you think about banning books from public libraries?
Well, I don't want to ban books, but I do want to ban books of the sexual nature that you're reading to third graders, because that doesn't make any sense to me. Let kids grow up. You don't have to teach them now how to have sex as a 9-year-old. Let them grow up the way we've grown up for centuries, and let kids just find out the old-fashioned way, hopefully maybe through their parents doing the birds and the bees. You know, my dad was a biology teacher, so for the five kids in my family, it was kind of easy to listen to my dad. But let kids grow up and sort of discover life the way they normally do through their kids, through their fellow friends. But, you know, hopefully you got strong parents that are leading them on a road that's not going to be detrimental to them. But let them decide where they want to be, like I said before, when they get older and become adults.
The new president of the American Library Association, Emily Dobrinsky, is a self-described Marxist lesbian. And here is a quote in the Washington Times from her. She says that every reader has a right to decide for themselves what they read, and that includes children.
Well, I don't think children are deciding to look at a book that has to deal with blowjobs and intercourse. I think those are being pushed on them by teachers in third grade, which is crazy to me. It's interesting, the whole Marxist thing. I mean, are people even aware truly what communism is all about and what Marxist has done? And all they got to do is look at the history of countries that are going through that. Venezuela is the most recent one that has just gone through such a huge change in the last 30 years with the governments that has come in there. I mean, how many people have been escaping that country? How many people want to get away from that? The most prosperous country in the Southern Hemisphere 30 years ago. Now it's one of the most poorest, and the people are just flooding out of that country. So, to me, I'm hard pressed to show where communism is a good thing, because all it does is it strips you away from hope and pride and self-esteem and motivation. It makes people lazy to get to the point that, oh, well, I've got to give up. And I think that's the biggest killer in America, let alone the world, I think, is apathy right now. Because people at the government, our government, just keeps taking each a little bit more and more in day. We're losing freedom of speech left and right. I mean, people are getting banned, getting arrested in our country now from freedom of speech. Why can't I have a different opinion than you? You can have a different opinion than me. I'm okay with that. That's what freedom of speech is all about. And that's the reason we had a constitution that most politicians don't want to pay attention to anymore.
Kevin Sorbo, you talked about and write about the fact that you were a victim of cancel culture, in your view, several years ago. What happened?
My manager and agent over a decade ago called me in and said, because you're, you know, what you're posting on Facebook, you know, your Christian views and your, and I looked, I'm trying to think of a post on Facebook. I put a lot of sarcasm and truth, sarcastic truth is what I do. People can still follow me on Twitter at KSorbs. I do very funny things. I mean, I made a joke on one. I said, I need more conspiracy theories, because all mine kept coming true. And that's why Facebook took me down. So, my agent and manager said we can't work it anymore, and I find that quite interesting, because I'm in an industry that always screams for tolerance. You know, if there's attack when they have gays in a movie, or they have, you know, a certain opinion, political movie, some people get very upset. I don't get upset about that. To me, but why do they get upset if I have a different point of view than they do? They scream for tolerance and freedom of speech, but let's face it, the hypocrisy in the world is so blatant and obvious right now. And you know, freedom of speech is a one-way street in Hollywood, which is too bad.
Has that affected your acting career?
No, I continued. It has affected me in terms of getting things in Hollywood, they're not gonna call me in anymore for any more cable, or certainly for network television. Just because I have a different point of view. But I formed SorboStudios.com. Please go to SorboStudios.com. A lot of things are coming on the pipe. And I've got four movies that are in post-production. I've got a wonderful movie opening at the end of October. There's the poster for it right there. It's called Miracle in East Texas. It's a wonderful family movie, PG rated. Opens October 29th. Go to SorboStudios.com. Get your tickets right now. And so I'm staying very busy. Since they booted me out, I've shot over 50 movies. So they're just not on the mainstream of Hollywood. I'm not going to get $100 million advertising budget behind this. But I do movies that Hollywood used to do. I do movies that have love and hope and redemption and faith and laughter and things like that. Hollywood wants to push anger and violence and sex. Well, I'm doing the opposite.
Now, Kevin Sorbo, in a way, you've kind of lived your value. You left California, correct?
We've been looking to move for a long time. Look, I love the state of California. I loved where I lived. I lived on the mountains 40 miles north of L.A. I missed my house there, but it got to a point that it was just unlivable for me. I mean, you look at the crime, you look at the taxes, you look at the traffic. I've shot over 80 movies, and I've shot probably 70 of those 80 movies in Texas or further east. So my wife and I just said, you know, we both got family here in the state of Florida, and we go, what are we doing here? Well, you know, this is, every time I'm on the 101 or 405, it would just cringe because it takes an hour and a half to go 20 miles. And I said, I'm done with this. I said, there's no reason for us to be here. I'm my own agent. I'm my own manager. So we made the move 5 years ago and haven't looked back since. I love it here in the state of Florida. It's been great. There's a reason why people are leaving New York, New Jersey, California, and all these other states, moving to Nevada, Texas, Tennessee, and Florida. There's a reason for that.
Kevin Sorbo, you and your wife, Sam, have co-written a book, and she's written several herself.
Yeah. She's been very busy. She's done a lot. I did a book called True Strength, My Journey from Hercules to Mere Mortal and How Nearly Dying Saved My Life. I had an aneurysm that I didn't know way up in my my shoulder and opened up and sent a series of clots, hundreds of clots into my arm, but a series of clots in my brain and suffered four strokes. Took me 3 years to fully recover from it. And I wrote a book talking about my journey, talking about that life throws obstacles. Here I was playing the strongest man in the world with Hercules. And all of a sudden I had to learn how to walk and balance again. And I'm very fortunate. And it was a book I didn't want to write. Sam bugged me to write it. She's a very strong-willed Pittsburgh, New York gal. And it's been a blessing. It came out 10 years ago, 11 years ago now. And I do about 15 speaking events a year with it now, something I thought I'd never be doing. And I speak on a wide range of things. So it's been kind of an interesting door that was opened to me. And then we did a follow-up book together called True Faith. Finding faith in all the anger and hatred in the world, and whether it's a religious faith or just having a belief in yourself that you can get past these obstacles without blaming God or God you don't believe in or the world or the government, and just really pushing yourself to be a better person. So this book was something totally different, something I wasn't expecting, because I knew Kirk was doing it, and I know people like Bethany Hamilton wrote a book for Brave Books. I mean, she was part of the movie I did called Soul Surfer with Dennis Quaid and Helen Hunt. So this has been kind of fun for me, doing something I never really thought I'd be doing.
And you have a third author in the family. I think it's your eldest son.
Braden. Braden's got a book out there. His initials are BS, Braden Sorbo, and he said the BS Guide to Politics. And he's actually been hitting the road. He just got back from a Charlie Kirk event, Turning Point USA, and he's got another one coming up. He's preparing right now his speech for that event coming up next month.
So what's the process of having three authors in one family?
I don't know. It's kind of fun. He's going to write another book right now. He's actually writing a script as well. So he's got the bug. I mean, I'm not surprised my two boys are sort of following my footsteps and Sam's footsteps, because they're, you know, homeschool advocates. Sam travels the country speaking homeschooling. And Braden and Shane's came up to me when they were 11 and 13 and said, "Dad, we want to be actors." And you know, they grew up in movie sets. So I've been in acting classes 3 years. Now Braden, I think, just finished his eighth or ninth movie, and Shane's done about four of them. So they're way ahead of me at age. I was doing commercials in Braden's age at 21, 22 years old, but I didn't really get my big break until my early 30s with Hercules.
So let's finish with going back to the test of lionhood. When you came up with the concept,
sure,
what's the difference between writing for children and writing for adults?
Well, I'm not an expert at it, but I think a lot of it has to do with all the books I read to my kids for 3 years. So I think I'm a semi, got a good idea, you know. And I know that the quality of books that they do is geared for that age group. And since I had three kids go through that, and I was the one that read children's books to them every night before I put them to bed up until they each were about 5, 6 years old, it's been fun. I mean, and Brave Books that had a great group of guys, you know, when we'd kick back ideas back and forth and stuff like that. So I was just thrilled to be part of this. And I'm looking forward to see the release coming up here in September and what happens with it.
Kevin Sorbo, The Test of Lionhood is his new children's book put out by Brave Books. We appreciate your time on Book TV.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
And you're watching About Books, a program and podcast produced by C-SPAN's Book TV. Well, each week, dozens of new books are published. Here's two. Washington Post reporter Taylor Laurent is out with her book on the history of social media and the world of influencer culture. It's called Extremely Online, The Untold Story of Fame, Influence, and Power on the Internet. And NPR host Steve Inskeep has added a title to the list of books about the most written about president in American history, Abraham Lincoln. Mr. Inskeep's book focuses on Lincoln's political acumen. It's titled Differ We Must, How Lincoln Succeeded in a Divided America. Also each week, new book reviews are published. In the Washington Examiner, Paul Bedard looked at Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul's newest book, Deception, The Great COVID Cover-Up. Mr. Bedard calls deception exactly what you thought it would be, a thorough takedown of Dr. Anthony Fauci and his disciples for feeding America a full plate of COVID-19 mush over the past 3 years. He adds, quote, if there is one lesson Senator Paul once learned from the crisis, it is to question authority. And the New York Times reviewed researcher Kat Bohannon's debut book, Eve, How the Female Body Drove 200 Million Years of Human Evolution. Quote, Bohannon has a poet's voice and a reporter's eye, the Times Review notes. Eve suggests a new way of thinking about one's body as a thing of time built on a foundation developed over millions of years. Well, coming up this weekend on Book TV, it's our weekly Afterwords program. This week, Wall Street Journal reporters Cameron McWhorter and Zusha Ellenson discuss the history of the AR-15 rifle and how the weapon has influenced American gun culture. They were interviewed by author and journalist Paul Barrett. Here's a preview.
But then this gun starts to take on more importance because it's pulled into the national gun debate. And that in the early 90s, it starts to be pulled in with a lot of discussion about as there's been some, you know, a few mass shootings start to happen here and there, and this gun starts to become pulled into the discussion. And Congress debates the assault weapons ban, which eventually passes in 1994. Bill Clinton signs it into law, and it includes, that whole debate focused a lot on some other guns, but the AR-15 is pulled into it and added to the ban. And that plays a critical role in turning this gun into a political symbol of the Second Amendment. And gun owners start to buy more and more of them. Now then this ban takes place. So the ban is supposedly going to, you couldn't buy an AR-15 theoretically. That's what a ban is. Well, in fact, as we show in the book, this ban really didn't work. The way it was worded, the way it was constructed, the way it was it achieved political the political will necessary to pass, there were the changes, the modifications that were required by gun companies to make these guns sellable again after the ban was relatively easy. And within months, companies were back in business selling slightly altered versions of the AR-15. So the gun sales continued throughout the ban. They sold a lot of guns during the ban. And the whole time it was a political symbol. So 10 years later, when the ban is lifted in 2004, the ban sunsets, gun sales go through the roof. And the gun companies are right there. That's a longer story, but these outsider gun companies suddenly find that everybody in the gun industry wants to start making AR-15s because they're as Stoner designed it to be. It's easy to put together, the parts are relatively inexpensive, and the profit margins the gun companies discovered were extremely high.
And a reminder that Afterwords airs every Sunday at 10 p.m. on Book TV. Well, thanks for joining us for About Books, a program and podcast produced by C-SPAN's Book TV. And a reminder that Book TV is on every Sunday. You can watch all of the programs that we produce online anytime at booktv.org.
Thanks for listening to About Books. We want to make sure you know about our latest podcast, Books That Shaped America. It's a companion podcast to our 10-week television series of the same name. We've teamed up with the Library of Congress and selected 10 books from across American history that have had a major impact on our society. Each week, the C-SPAN television program will focus on one of these books and its impact. This companion podcast will give you more background on the book's authors. If you want to learn more about Books That Shaped America, go to our website, c-span.org. The podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts.